I think one day we will not be able to understand why our insurance premiums have gone up, for example, because we are not privy to the decision making and the data that led to that. We won't understand why we sometimes are just turned down for a job somewhere, because companies will be hiring companies which will be hiring companies which will be hiring companies which will have access to data that enables them to make decisions. And I think that there will be eventually a revolt by individuals, and that may be where the blockchain starts to come back into play. The blockchain at its purest may allow the individual to assert control over what happens to their data and the monetization of that data.
I'm Steve Stein, and this is Inside Asia, and that was the voice of Jeremy Wagstaff, a longtime technology writer with nearly 30 years of experience across the region. This is the New Kids on the Blockchain episode. You've probably heard of blockchain, but what is it exactly and how does it work?
Okay, yeah, that's the $60,000 question, isn't it? And you can hear the leather squeaking beneath me as I frame an answer.
You're squirming.
Okay, yeah. So let me take a stab at this. Blockchain are the rails upon which Bitcoin was designed to run. Mm. So blockchain came about because somebody, Satoshi Nakamoto, whoever he or she or they is, needed a way for a digital currency, in this case Bitcoin, to operate without any central bank or any bank involved, in any party involved, so that you could have a transaction between two or more people who didn't know or trust each other. So one of the key things was, because everything is digital, everything can be copied. And so you first of all need to ensure that the coin itself, Bitcoin or whatever is the transaction is, cannot be copied. If I'm giving you something, you need to be confident I'm not giving the same thing to somebody else, which in the digital world has been a problem that nobody's ever really solved. This is why the Sonys of this world had all these complicated DRM mechanisms for...
What are DRMs?
Digital rights management, okay. To make it so that people couldn't copy their music or whatever it is that we're trying to preserve, to the point where Sony was accused of installing malware on people's computers because of the complexity of the software they were installing. So blockchain simply allows somebody to have a transaction with somebody else. And by transaction, it can be anything. It doesn't have to be a financial transaction. I can give you a piece of information that I don't want to share with other people. That's a transaction.
So Bitcoin being kind of the first child of blockchain, demonstrating the capabilities of blockchain, making sure that there's kind of guarantees or provides this assurance for security, privacy, the inability to replicate. As it's growing and being proven, other organizations, from healthcare organizations to technology companies to media organizations, are now saying, wow. Mm. So if we can avoid the possibility of being replicated and our product will be truly protected, maybe blockchain is a solution. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Blockchain solves a number of problems at the same time. It means that you can be sure that I haven't given this to somebody else. It means you can be sure that the record of that transaction is not going to be altered by anyone ever.
So one example, perhaps is a digital patient records, medical records. It's been a constant issue in the U.S. and elsewhere about, well, there's privacy involved, right? If somebody's medical records are divulged, then there might be an insurance company finds out, they might increase, the premiums and the insurance policies on people, and that would bankrupt the system. Or if people kind of could exploit that, an employer could fire somebody if they discovered they had cancer. So what do? Well, we just keep it in our narrow little analog categories. With blockchain, you now have the ability of making sure that all that information is available to all parties as and when necessary, and the control point is the patient, is the individual. Does that kind of characterize the possibilities here?
Yeah, that's a very good example of the possibilities. So we tend to think of, because another feature of the blockchain is because it doesn't require anybody controlling it, no central body, which in financial terms would mean a bank or a central bank or some regulatory authority. But if we broaden the definition of a transaction to anything moving between two people, it means that all that stuff can be decentralized. And it suddenly starts to be interesting, not just to libertarians who don't like the idea of government, but people for whom the problem of sharing things has been that you're not quite sure that you trust the person who's proposing the deal, if you like, to be the holder of the cards. Right.
And you couldn't trust that banks could discern whether or not they were trustworthy or not. They were just a transaction mechanism. They were just a middleman.
Yeah, exactly. And anybody who's tried to transfer money from one place to another and found that it went missing somewhere in the system with none of the correspondent banks accepting responsibility for it. When I tried to put money down for a house in the UK, the money went missing for 2 weeks. And nobody in the chain would accept responsibility. Yeah. So when banks start telling me about how the importance of trusted institutions, I kind of wonder exactly whether I wouldn't have preferred that whole thing to have taken place on the blockchain.
Which explains why you're homeless in Singapore now.
Exactly. Can I stay here tonight?
I think so. It's a leather chair. You look like you're settling in just nicely. So one of the things I want to ask you is really if it just, you know, just the way that in some ways pornography, you know, allowed us to kind of test the possibilities for e-commerce, you know, pay for a photo and, you know, get it downloaded. And it really kind of revolutionized and created possibilities. You know, tell us a little bit about how blockchain and which group is actually experimenting with blockchain and maybe kind of that precursor to other possibilities.
Yeah, so I think that one of the areas I've been looking at is this sharing of sensitive information. Mm. It's very hard for people to trust each other to share sensitive information. Another feature of the blockchain is that you can build in these so-called smart contracts. Mm. It's not a very good term, but it explains it enough, I suppose, that if I want to share information with you, but I don't want you to share that information with other people, I need to be sure that you aren't making a copy of that information for your own records. I need to be sure that if you do use that information and it leads to an arrest or something productive, that I get credit for it. And I also want to be sure that I get that information, that intelligence that I shared with you back at some point. Yeah.
But I was also thinking about gamers.
Yeah.
You know, the way the gamers are you know, and they're on these computers day in, day out. I mean, they live on this stuff. They're transacting on this. I mean, it's almost a cult unto itself, but they're highly technically innovative. And, you know, might blockchain be applied in the world of computer gamers?
Okay, so gamers are this much neglected part of the economy. They actually kind of keep the whole thing humming.
That's it. That's the bait. That's it. It's the gamers. I knew I needed to thank somebody.
Yeah, you need to thank gamers for the faster chips in your computer, the better screens that you've got, and the fact that these guys are willing to spend $1 million on a digital island or $600 on a digital jacket for keeping the economy humming. But they also are exploring, or companies in this gaming world are exploring, using tokens, which is a kind of another way of Bitcoin is a token. Anything that sits on the blockchain would be a token, as a way of rewarding gamers for testing games before they're released. Mm. Because if you're a game developer, the chance of you getting a hit is very small, 1 in a million. So you really want to try and road test these things, but focus groups are not particularly useful. Trying it on your grandkids may not be all that useful either. But if you have a marketplace of willing gamers,
global no less,
who are willing to test these things and put it through its paces in exchange for rewards, which they can then use on other gaming related products, then you've created a kind of mini economy on its own. Yes, you could give them money. But what you want to do is to sort of lock them into an area where they can use the tokens for the things that they care about. Mm. And the blockchain is a good way of storing this information.
It's a walled garden. It's kind of currency exists within this world of computer gaming and trade and develop and create these virtual environments and make these virtual purchases. And that's good enough for gamers.
Yeah, exactly. And the great thing about gamers is that they're kind of already technically knowledgeable. The trick is to try to find a marketplace where they're comfortable, the game developers are comfortable posting their new beta releases of games, and the gamers themselves are ready to put these things through their paces.
This is Inside Asia, and my guest is Jeremy Wagstaff, Chief Technology Correspondent with Reuters News Agency in Asia, a leading thinker and commentator on tech in Asia. We've been talking about blockchain and Bitcoin. Let's get back to our conversation. I asked him where we're headed, what's in store, and what keeps him up at night.
Well, I am extremely concerned about personally identifiable data.
Isn't that resolved with the whole blockchain idea we've been discussing? I mean, if just like currency, I mean, can it be true with identity? So are you saying that you feel like there's a particularly unique problem here?
Yes, I don't think the problem is unique, but I'm not sure that it's yet solvable with blockchain. The problem is that what has emerged in the last 10 years are companies whose business model relies on the exploitation of personal data. The old adage that if you're not paying for something, then you are the product. Mm. And that data is being collected by companies from Google downwards. And while they often have to submit to privacy laws, some of them quite stringent in the EU, I already hear squeals of complaint from a lot of companies about new privacy laws that are being introduced in the EU. The reality is that there's a huge shadowy industry of companies that manage to piece these little discrete slices of data together to create a very complex, rich profile of individuals. And while we're always told that those details are anonymized and never associated with individuals, the truth is that the industry is moving so fast, so quickly, and is becoming so skillful at being able to measure our lives through everything we do, that the issue about whether that data is anonymized or not, to me, is moot.
So almost like digital clones. I mean, piecing together little Jeremy's or little Steve somewhere in the world with all of our secret and private data and then presenting it to the marketplace as if that's authentically me or you, and then being able to kind of exploit that, drain our bank accounts or buy expensive things, which we would never buy otherwise. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not necessarily looking at it from a criminal point of view.
I am. I'm definitely thinking of a criminal point of view.
Well, inevitably, I mean, the criminals are always sort of one step ahead.
Right.
But I see it more worryingly in that there's very little transparency into this. I kind of welcome EU laws, but I would question whether the people framing those laws necessarily understand the complexity of what they're dealing with and therefore are able to legislate it properly.
Is it even possible, given the nature of the internet and the fact that we have these blockchain technologies? I mean, are they just kind of chasing their tail on this one?
Yeah, well, I think one day we will see how the impact of this, when we'll not be able to understand why our insurance premiums have gone up, for example, because we are not privy to the decision-making and the data that led to that rise in insurance premium. We won't understand why we sometimes are just turned down for a job somewhere, because companies will be hiring companies, which will be hiring companies, which will be hiring companies, which will have access to data that enables them to make decisions. And I think that there will be eventually a revolt by individuals, and that may be where the blockchain starts to come back into play. The blockchain at its purest may allow the individual to assert control over what happens to their data and the monetization of that data. After all, we're basically allowing other people to make money from what we do, see, feel, hear, say, right, etc.
And so while companies are out there exploring the possibilities and the promise of data analytics, big data analytics, and, you know, trying to grapple with the idea of how do I synthesize and use and analyze this data in order to understand predictively how somebody might act or react or behave, that's great in terms of serving the customer. But what you're saying is the dark side, the underbelly, is that it might be used against somebody in order to deny them a job, deny them a product, deny them a flight, for that matter, if you've acted up on some flight as a point. So the data cuts both ways.
Yeah, exactly. And we may already be seeing this and not seeing it, as you are. You may already, decisions may be made, for example, when we're booking an online flight. It may be possible for them to offer us a certain price depending on our past activity and their understanding of the size of our bank balance.
So this is almost into the Freedom of Information Act. At any point, you'll be able to kind of submit to an organization to say, I would like to know the underpinning as to why you rejected me on that healthcare policy, or I would like to know why the price just went up for me 25% versus my wife, who only went ahead to pay 5%. So you'll get to, potentially have the right to understand the data behind the decision that was taken.
Yeah, exactly, and be able to alter that. I mean, the blockchain, in theory, well, actually, the way it works at the moment is that data is immutable; it can't be changed. But if that data is also visible then it may be possible for people to kind of have some recourse. I suspect we're already further down this road. The conversations I have with companies in this space, I barely understand what they're talking about, but the scary general conclusion of everything they say is that they are able to slice and dice this data and put it in buckets, as they call them, buckets of people with certain interests, goths who live in a certain HDB block, who have an interest in pizza and watching the English Premier League, for example, so that marketers can get very close to specifying who they want to target, down to the tower, down to the individual level almost. Now, that's a very short throw from being able to identify the individual. And if you're able to identify the individual, that is the holy grail of every marketer's dream. And that data is going to be extremely valuable. That Google can charge $500 for you to be able, for someone to be able to put a Google ad on that page if they know for sure that it's going to hit you. That's how valuable this market is.
That was my interview with Jeremy Wagstaff, Asia tech correspondent and commentator. What does the future hold? Are we on the cusp of a utopian existence where virtual reality and the Internet of Things blend seamlessly with our higher selves? A moment where every thought and desire can be instantaneously translated into action to generate an evolved state of being? Or are we staring down the barrel of a dystopian future, where the least of our decisions is carefully monitored by governments and corporate security units who profess good intentions while unleashing AI bots to decipher and predict our every move? Remember the sci-fi film Brazil? Are we but a breath away from a world where a single data mishap results in job loss, insurance fiascos, loan recalls, and incarceration? It's not that you'll be powerless to change the mind of the machine that decides your future or control the companies that right now are mining your data. It's that you won't know those verdicts are happening in the first place. In fact, you may never know. The ghost in the machine is omnipresent. When that happens, there'll be no cops to call and no governments to lobby. As Jeremy Wagstaff, my guest this episode, points out, we can't rely on our politicians. They don't get it. So consumed are they with the short-term political gains, the complexity and urgency of the situation is passing them by. Even if they did understand, corporate lobbyists have a vested interest in keeping new laws on privacy and consumer protection at bay. It's a ghost they're fighting, and too many of them don't even believe in ghosts. But that's not the end of the story. If history teaches us anything, it's that people will revolt. They will want their data back, and data, now and in the future, is identity. Individuals will seek out ways of sharing their information safely and securely. And it's in blockchain that they might just be able to find sanctuary. It's a foot race to the finish. Will governments or corporations regulate, contain, and control data before it's too late? Or will superheroes from a faraway blockchain planet arrive to save the day, preserve the rights of the individual, and stave off that dystopia state that makes for great films but puts a blemish on an otherwise intoxicating existence? Ready or not, here we go. Thanks for listening. This is Inside Asia. For more about our program, to download any of our episodes, and to find out more about Jeremy Wagstaff, my guest this episode, head to www.insideasiapodcast.com. As always, I'm Steve Stein saying, come in from the outside on Inside Asia.